Today's initial reaction is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com and use code GOT20 to get 20% off your official Game of Thrones merchandise. I'm looking at it right now. This stuff is awesome. House Lannister cufflinks. Of course, we got the Hand of the King and Hand of the Queen pins. Lannister Lion Sigil cufflinks. These are incredible. Check it out. Go to cufflinks.com. They got a banner right up top that says GOT. Click on it. Use code GOT20 now. Cufflinks.com/DVR. Go there today. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. We are here to initially react to the third episode of Season 8, which is called, I believe, The Long Night. I think that's the title of the episode. I'm here right now with the co-host, along with Abe, of A Pod of Cast, Roberto Suarez. Roberto, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Axel.
And let's just get into it, man. What did you think of the episode?
So I have mixed feelings, Axel.
Oh.
I have mixed feelings because on the one hand, I thought it was, you know, as far as like being having this epic feel to it, I thought it was fantastic. The pacing, the way that it kind of would have moments of a lot of battle action and then slower moments that were almost kind of horror movie-like.
Yeah.
I really liked how it didn't... You know, I saw the interview that they do post show with the producers, and they said that, you know, you can't just have relenting battle the whole time because you just kind of eventually kind of get bored with just battle. So I like that they did that pacing where it would kind of come in waves and you would focus on what was going on with different areas. I also liked that there was one particular element that was wholly unexpected for me. Thinking about how I thought this battle was going to play out. And that was the way that the Night King used the weather to his advantage. I had not, kind of foreseen that would be an element that could totally cripple the plan that they had put into action and the use of the dragons during the battle. I guess the part where I'm feeling a little bit disappointed is that I was afraid of the Death Star solution to the Night King, that, you know, you kill the Night King and everything everyone is defeated, right? You know, you hit the porthole in the Death Star and the whole thing goes, right? I knew that had been set up for a while. But I guess there was a part of me that had started to think that perhaps we would actually have more of the presence of the White Walker army coming down all the way into King's Landing. I had started to think that perhaps this wasn't just going to be relegated to one episode. Perhaps it was going to stretch over a couple of episodes and that it would go beyond the North. But obviously, they decided that this whole... saga that's been going on for 8 years where we've been expecting the attack of the White Walkers was going to culminate with one major episode. So I just going to have to make my peace with that.
Well, you know, I feel where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
When Arya killed the Night King, I had two immediate conflicting emotions. This is the most incredibly awesome thing I've ever seen on television. And I am so disappointed because now we don't get to find out all the crazy mythology and Bran warging and Night Kings and headed back past the wall and Night Queens and crazy stuff like that. And I felt like you said that, is this how it ends?
Right.
You know, like that simple act, but in so much in history, and even in this show, it's one simple act that starts something. Mm-hmm. So why can't it be one simple act that ends it?
Yeah.
You know, and really, it is as Bran said when Theon looked at him before, and he said, everything you've done has led you to be here. Why would it be any different? It is how it is. And everything we saw was really about Arya the whole time leading up to this to kill the Night King. So many little instances we could look back. And now I think of my rewatch. So that feeling subsided and I was left loving it.
Yeah. I mean, I have to totally agree that in the moment when, because it, I got to say, they did a masterful job of making you forget about Arya. You know, last we see her before this moment, it's that scene where Melisandre tells her, you know, what do we say to death? And she says, you know, not today. And then she disappears. And there was enough happening in between that moment and the moment that she attacked the Night King that we had, I had completely forgotten and even considered the fact that she would be the one to end the Night King. So I'm sitting with my wife, Barb, and all of a sudden Arya jumps and we're like, wow, you know, like totally excited about it. But then, you know, kind of like sitting here and being like, oh my God, but for 8 years, we've been hearing about how this is the threat, right? This is the major threat to our characters. And here it is. It's come to an end. So yeah, I think I very much feel where you're coming from, that it has, you know, they were going to be damned if they did and damned if they didn't, right? There's this kind of situation where you have to decide how are you going to play this story out.
Yeah.
And the reality is that when it comes down to kind of the dramatic impact of the story, really, it's the drama between the Lannisters and the Starks that becomes kind of the key focus there. We've gotten to know Cersei and those characters for so long that we know there has to be an important payoff with that. The Night King, you know, for all intents and purposes, there's not a lot of depth to the character, at least what they've given us of him. So his death, you know, the leaving, I guess, the Night King to be the ultimate big bad of the entire story, maybe would not have been as satisfying. So we deal with the Night King now, and then we move towards dealing with the bad guy that we all truly love to hate, which is Cersei, for the next half of the season.
Yeah, you know, Roberto, we saw the Night King created by a little female putting the obsidian into him, and we saw him die by a little female sticking the dagger into him, right? And the circle is complete. And really, we think of this, it was a legend, like you said, with build up over 8 years, the old Nan's tales, right? All this magic and all what the Night King represents. But really, what the Night King represents was a weapon made by people who were scared that got out of control. And it became something bigger. And in the end, aren't all of our fears really something small? You know what I mean? We conflate them. And we as an audience conflate something. And if anything, we were at least shown the strength that the army had by the way they were overrun. They were going to win.
Oh, no, totally. They were
massacring them. It was not even a contest.
No way they were going to win. There was just no way.
So, I mean, that was something that I kind of expected. So when I'm watching it, I'm sitting there and I'm going, hey, this is actually turning out pretty much how I thought it would turn out. I was actually more surprised when Danny and John jumped in or people survived. You have to give, I mean, there's going to be a lot of complaints. Jamie, Brienne, Pod pinned against a wall for like a half an hour and they don't die. You know, but it's television. I let that go. I don't really, you know what I mean? Like, it's a TV show. I enjoy the story.
And there's a sense to, I mean, a lot of the, of what we were seeing in this battle was reminiscent to me of the Battle of Helm's Deep in the Lord of the Rings movies, where characters kind of take on this epic quality, where all of a sudden one person can take on hundreds
and,
of.
And anytime you look at them, the crowd separates in their spotlight.
So there is that kind of like, you know, these are heroic creatures. These are folks whose ability goes kind of beyond a normal human. And at times of real need, they kind of tap into the best in them. So I can kind of let that go. I mean, we had some deaths. I guess that's something that we can definitely talk about here is we lost Theon. And we lost I wasn't expecting or hadn't thought about the death of Lyanna of Bear Island, which was
Lyanna Mormont.
Lyanna Mormont. Yep. We also had the death of Dolores Edd and the death of course, Ser Jorah.
Yeah, Jorah Friendzone, you know. Bit it. That's the truth.
Yes, and Friendzone to the end with Ser Jorah.
Friends till the end. Oh, and yeah. Can we count Melisandre? Is Melisandre dead?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like in a kind of a more of a prophetic way, right? She didn't die at the hand of any monsters or anything. It was basically the fulfillment of her role. And I think it led me to think, you know, that just as much as the Night King represented the ice, maybe she represented kind of like the fire side, that both of those sides had to kind of die. That's in the end.
Yeah,
you know, like it was a kind of a counterbalance to the death of the Night King. I'm not sure if that was kind of what they were alluding to there. But
yeah, I was a little disappointed. I have to say, I did think among the millions of theories that I always have, but I was pretty confident that Melisandre was going to show up because she was the one who was always talking about this battle. You know, she was really actually. She was the first one on the show to be fully committed to it, right?
Right.
She only wanted Stannis to be the king so he could fight the Night King. That was her whole point. People forget that.
Yep.
And I was just, you know, we had some feedback. I did a feedback show earlier today and someone had suggested like that she rides in with like all female army to go against the all male White Walkers. Craster's sons. And I thought that might be cool. I thought maybe dragons, you know, I had a lot of ideas, but when just a singular figure comes out and then she lights the swords, that was awesome. That was just Melisandre. I liked her part in this. I thought it was cool. She actually played a big part in this episode.
Yeah. 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 I mean, she, to the extent that she was allowed to kind of be the representative for the fire, that's who she came to be there, right? She came to be the one who, without her, the trenches wouldn't light. Without
her, that thing. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that elemental thing you talked about, the way the Night King, that was awesome. I just want to throw back. Thanks for mentioning that. But
sure.
I like your thing that you're saying. I'm getting this too about the fire and that because we've always put that on Danny and John.
Yeah,
but these are like the higher level magic people.
Right. And, you know, she appears to be an ancient creature as well. So maybe she's been, you know, kind of preparing for this final encounter with the Night King for millennia, for all that we know. And so she finally has fulfilled her purpose and lets go at the last moment here now that she knows that the threat is gone.
Wow. Man, I'm still a little bit stunned.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think my way through it and feel my way through it. One question I have for you, because we are going to go over it and review it on our pods. Where do we go from here? I mean, did you expect that three episodes in? I mean, I know at some point I probably said, hey, maybe they'll kill Cersei three episodes in, or maybe they'll kill Night King. But I didn't really believe that, you know? So when it happened, I mean, we do just have Cersei now, and these are the three long episodes that are left.
Right.
They're like all over an hour and 18 or 20 minutes. So
yeah, though this one was the longest. Yeah. So they did stretch this one the longest of the remaining episodes. And I thought that it was going to be kind of a split thing where we would have two episodes kind of covering the battle in the north and then two episodes to resolve the matters down south. They had dropped the hint a couple of episodes ago in the premiere when Yara headed to the Iron Islands that they would be prepared there so that if they needed to retreat, they could do so at the Iron Islands. So I was thinking that was kind of a hint being dropped there, that would be maybe perhaps where the second episode would have gone if Winterfell was completely overrun, that the survivors would have gone to the Iron Islands and maybe finally complete the battle of Winterfell and the Iron Islands. But obviously they didn't go that way. So now it looks like the resolution will be over the next three episodes. Another possibility is I'm thinking, could they resolve the story of Westeros at King's Landing over the next two episodes and then have the final episode be some kind of a flash forward episode.
Ooh.
Something to give us kind of a future of where Westeros is, you know, several generations down the road.
Roberto, why are you getting me all excited like this? Because you know I love shit like that. That is like, that's my jam. I totally want them to do that. And that would be so much fun. And I'd love it if the last episode had no characters we ever met before. It was like a whole new cast.
It would be interesting, they just, right?
That would be so, and then like at the end, you know, like Melisandre appears, you know what I mean? Like we see a lady with a necklace.
Yeah.
That would be fun, dude.
I guess it's one of those things that I've been wondering, you know, because we, with all the, you know, given that this is the final season and we want to have some kind of a resolution, you know, is it just simply going to end with our characters kind of showing us, you know, whoever's supposed to end up in the Iron Throne, or even if there is going to be an Iron Throne. But then, you know, what are the effects of the actions that they took? What does it look like 500 years or 1,000 years later, and see what the world of Westeros has become under the rule of whatever comes out of the resolution here. So who knows? Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, I was talking with my wife after it ends, and I, too, watched the episode with my wife. Her name's Perry, not Barb, though. Uh-huh. I thought this could be like a Superman moment. Is her name Martha? She kind of said to me, she said, oh, maybe, I don't know, I'm a little disappointed. You know, they're just going to fight Cersei or whatever. And I said, well, but the thing is, that's always what we kind of wanted to happen, mm-hmm. right? We want this story to continue. I mean, there are some of us out there who wanted the Night King to win and kill everyone, and the last shot was him standing on a mountain, and it's just an ice world, and then it cracks, and then all Planetos is gone.
Right.
But, you know, they're nihilists. I'm not a nihilist. Right. I wanted it to continue. So I'm almost, like, more excited now that we get to see the real resolution of this story, because for me, the Night King and the mythology is super exciting, and I love getting into it and talking about it and theorizing. But what I really loved was Arya and the Hound walking around together. Yeah. What I really loved was Jon's rise, was Dany learning, was Sansa learning. All these things I really loved. So I'm excited to see how they do live on. And I'm excited that the idea that I'd kind of held myself, which is, it's good that they're talking about what's going to happen next. Like even that Cersei was like, what we're going to do after that. Or she wasn't that taken aback by the Night King, because it almost shows a faith in humanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we're going to survive.
Yeah.
The pack survives.
And it's going to be interesting how this goes now, because pretty much the major threats to Cersei's rule were the Dothraki army and the Unsullied army that Dany has for multiple years now been trying to get to Westeros. And both of those things were decimated in this one battle. So we're really down now to really the people who believe in these characters to join them against Cersei. These outsiders now have no bearing at all. I mean, there's still some Unsullied that survived, but we know it looks like many, many of them did not make it. And the way they dealt with the Dothraki here was just fantastic. I mean, it was crazy to think how immediately they were destroyed in that first attack against the White Army. And so now it comes down to the people of Westeros to decide who they're going to side with. It's not going to be because you have these massive armies who came from the outside to support you. So that will be very interesting to see how that has, you know, what impact that has. Cersei's in a very strong position now going into the next episode.
Yeah, it's she was right. The Littlefinger plan finally worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just funny to think that in 2 weeks ago, when she laughed, when she heard that the wall fell, that the Queen of Arrogance is actually correct.
Yeah.
And her plan to keep on moving on was the right one.
Her confidence played out. I mean, to what extent, too, like, are the dragons seemed pretty hurt? I mean, they might not be battle ready at all to take on whatever comes next. So, yeah. I mean, she's definitely now in a position where she doesn't appear to be the vulnerable one. And her biggest problem, which was the Night Army or the Night King's army, has been dealt with. And the remaining enemy is completely weakened at this point. So,
having a great discussion with Roberto. Just want to pop in here and remind you, go to cufflinks.com. They're a supporter of this podcast, just like you. Cufflinks.com/DVR. Go check out their Game of Thrones products. Man, this is some, that Lannister Lion Red men's tie is incredible. I love that shade of red, and the lion is just etched in there. The Targaryen dragon gray men's tie, the same thing. The three heads of the dragon etched into the tie. It's wonderful. This is high quality products at cufflinks.com. Use code GOT20 today. Get 20% off your order. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Now back to the show.
So I had a question for you, Axel, and that is, you know, winter is coming has been uttered since the first episode of Game of Thrones. Does the death of the Night King change that, or is winter still coming in some fashion to Westeros?
That is a fantastic question. And I think the greater question, right, is do the magical unknown elements of this world still play a large part in what's left to tell in our story, right? Mm-hmm. If the next episode comes and all of a sudden it's spring, I guess we're going to have an answer to our question.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But if the next episode comes and Bran is still warging out, or there's still a sense of dread or a sense of something, if they build that even like texturally, right, we're going to feel that. And that's one of my main questions, because I already saw people on Twitter saying, like, you know, Bran's not finished yet. There's still something that always has to be done. And if you think about it in the stories we know, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, all that, there's always that after magic stuff, right? The way that it really has to kind of wrap up in some way. Like, you know, we cut to Bran and John is like, it's over, Bran. You're back, my brother. You know, and he's like, no, John, it's really only begun. And then it's like, we got to do this too to get to certain, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I don't know yet. I don't know if I was never sure whether that kind of weird weather of this planet was caused by the White Walkers, because of the lore that I know just from reading a little bit of the books, listening to some of the other stuff, it seemed like that's always a part of this place.
Right.
So maybe the White Walkers are an outgrowth of that, not the other way around.
Maybe. Right.
You know, they're representative of another force, because one thing I do have to think about is, how did the children know they could create a White Walker? Is this part of something bigger, and will that reveal come? If it doesn't, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay with this just being a weird magical planet. Yeah. I don't need to know the midichlorians.
Right.
But if they go into it, I'm also okay, because that's freaking cool.
And I don't know that they'll go into it here, but I do know that as they're thinking of, I know that they're in the process of producing this prequel series.
Yes.
That
may be where they just a pilot.
Just a pilot. Okay. Yeah. But you know, I think looking at the resolution of the whites and the White Walker army and this threat from the north, you know, you can see how this is the hubris of thousands of years ago by the creation of the White Walkers, who were supposed to protect the children of the forest. And they just kind of almost like the fears we have of artificial intelligence, you know, that it caught a mind of its own and it became its own thing out of the control of the children of the forest. And now that has been finally kind of come to a full close. So what impact does that have in the way other magical things operate in this world is kind of a... So I mean, I guess with the resolution of this story and kind of it coming full circle with the mistake of the children of the forest now finally being undone, maybe where the story goes now is that we find some kind of balance in this world by moving into the season of spring. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see if that's how it plays out.
It's so fascinating because as they kind of perhaps cut off the head of a lot of the speculation, theories, ideas, a new one arises, right? Because I wish I knew more, and neither of us are experts on these books, knew more about the time before the White Walkers,
right?
Like what elements arose there and mm-hmm. what is to come? Because do you feel that spring means no magic? Does spring mean no dragons? Does it mean just regular humans?
I don't know. I mean, that would be kind of following that Lord of the Rings formula, right? Where we have a land of magic, and as the generations pass and the ages of Middle Earth pass, it's all about magic kind of leaving and humanity becoming the dominant kind of force in the world. Game of Thrones, I had always understood it as almost an opposite to that, a world in which there wasn't magic, but then magic begins to emerge. So as we're now kind of moving towards the closure of the series, I'm wondering if, you know, is the idea to when we reach whatever the next phase is, you know, whether it's the phase of spring, is that then where magic is fully a part of this world? Or was this just kind of a temporary situation where magic had to return to deal with this threat, but now we're going to see kind of the waning down of magic going away again? I mean, the dragons are fairly vulnerable. We don't have that many dragons. These are probably the last three dragons world of Westeros is going to see. The threat of the Night King is done. So, I mean, maybe all this was about, we had to have magic had to return in order to deal with this threat. Now that threat is gone, maybe it's meant to then go back again to how things were. Maybe magic here is not about it returning, but coming back at times when it's needed.
Yeah, see, that's how I kind of think of it, of more of attaining a balance or an understanding and an acceptance of it, mm-hmm. and not always using it for war.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what we've seen. What are dragons? They're weapons. What is a White Walker? A weapon. Where is the magic that helps people? I mean, the Lord of Light was bringing people back just to fight the bad guy, just to fight the weapons. So he was just creating weapons, right?
Yeah.
So that time that existed when the weirwood trees were plentiful and the children and the giants frolicked before man and the weirwood network was up and running, do they need to return to that but with people? Like, do they need to right the wrongs of the original quote-unquote sin, which was man kind of coming to this new land and chopping down all the trees and dominating it? And subjugating and massacring the people that were there. Mm-hmm. But it's like you come to a point where time has to turn. And it is what it is, right? And at this point, could there be dragons without people using them as weapons? Probably not. You know?
Yeah. And is that, you know, what ultimately does Danny's purpose of breaking the wheel, what does that mean? Does it mean breaking the political system? Does it mean breaking the cycle of war? Does it mean breaking how things have been done since the time when humanity first appeared and needing to change that? I mean, it's all up for speculation, obviously, but... you know, there's been, from a political standpoint, there are some theories out there that what this is leading to is to kind of the end of the monarchy, right? And to leading to some kind of a democracy.
Definitely.
So maybe there is something that, what do you pair that with? So if politically we can come to a more democratic nation, How does that manifest itself in the way that we treat the world around us and in the way that we balance ourselves with nature? If we are no longer at war with each other, we don't need to exploit nature for our purposes to use it for war. So how does war then get, how does nature get used for the benefit of men and of people to help move the world forward, as opposed to always using nature and the forces of nature and the forces of magic in the benefit of war?
Yeah. What a man. This is great stuff. All right. I want to just ask you, what were some of your favorite action elements to this episode? It was so action filled. I want to point out and just call first, when Arya finally used that Gendry weapon, and she was just slicing and dicing and karate chopping and doing all that stuff that she had learned with the waif.
Yeah.
I thought that it was totally worth people on Reddit looking up that weapon and trying to design it at home in a 3D printer to see what it really did and all this crazy. Like, I thought that in the midst of this huge scene, you always have those little battles, and that was just so choreographed and shot so perfectly, I just stood up and I was like, wow, that was like the best fight of the whole night.
It was well earned too, because we've been able, this is somebody that you can believe that through the years, she has gotten to the point of becoming this formidable warrior. Yeah. It wasn't a Luke Skywalker spending a couple of days in Dagobah and all of a sudden Jedi, right? She has been honing her skills since season one, from the moment she showed an interest in sword fighting, from the moment she held needle in her hand, and all throughout the series, becoming a faceless one and continuing to train and all this stuff. So it was definitely, we could accept that she is this battle-ready individual. At the same time, she too, even with her skill, got completely overwhelmed, you know, and she had to kind of, at one point, had to just run out of there, had to revert and revert to her scared younger self, hiding from these monsters inside her home, right? So that was also kind of a realistic piece there. And then I was glad that we got that callback when she meets with Melisandre, and they're like, wait a second, we've met before, and you had told me this before. And so that kind of, that being able to make that callback there to be what gives her the inspiration to do what needs to be done, which was, you know, to confront the Night King or surprise the Night King with her attack. I thought that was very well done.
Oh, man. It was awesome. And I want to point out, I love what you said there about how Arya was finally really confronted with her own mortality there. After learning all these skills of being an assassin and killing other people and the faces and all that, I thought it was important that in this episode, she, like everyone, had to retreat. Every single one of our heroes retreated at some point.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And pulled back.
It was clearly, the odds were clearly stacked way, way against them.
Yeah. It was great. Okay. And Arya just, that scene, the scene with her and Beric and the Hound just fighting their way out like that,
yeah,
was so intense. And we got to see parts of Winterfell we hadn't seen before, this library. And then they ended up in the same place where they had the fireside chat.
Yes.
That's where Melisandre saw Arya.
And it was great to have a sense of scale. You know, at one point, we were, Barbara and I were watching the episode, and it was a scene where all of a sudden things were kind of quiet. It's where, when Arya first gets into the castle and she's trying to make it to that door, and we're like, well, where's everybody? And, you know, Barb asked me, so is Winterfell kind of like a city? And so it kind of gave us the sense that, you know, this is a pretty big place. This is a place where there's a commerce taking place. It's not necessarily a city, but it's a large area. It encompasses a large area. So it was nice that, you know, yes, there's this battle going out there, but there's still a lot of space that the White Walkers are still needing to kind of work their way into. And then slowly but surely, we saw that build up until the moment, of course, when the White King does that massive resurrection, and the moment that many people were speculating online, the corpses in the crypts come to life, completely then overwhelm the castle. So So yeah, I thought that was well done.
Oh man. Yeah. The crypt thing was so obvious. I thought they were going to turn it, but, and make it that there had been a little theory going around that they would fight for them. They would protect them, and it would be like a turning point, kind of magical turning point in the battle. Man, I had a billion ideas. But when it finally happened, it was realistic. It was just skeletons popping out. And the part with Sansa and Tyrion and her kissing his hand, because I hate to say this. I'm a 45-year-old man. I'm going to use this word, Roberto, but I ship them. Is that what they say? I like Tyrion and Sansa. I think they're a great couple, and I hope they end up together.
And for a moment there, it looked like they were going to die here. I mean, those were two deaths that I was not expecting here. And the way they set it up, I was just like, oh my God, are they going to die here? But it was, you know, even though it was something that a lot of people anticipated, they kind of left it far enough along in the story, you know, that power of the Night King, he had to be there and present to start making all those bodies come back to life. So it wasn't something that he could have done. It looks like there is something to be said about proximity. And so he couldn't have just done that before he even appeared at Winterfell. At least that's kind of how I interpreted it. But it was just enough, you know, to add that element of really kind of like what played out in the castle was much more of a horror movie while there was this war movie going on the outskirts of the castle. I think one of my favorite scenes, and I alluded to this earlier, I loved the incredible high of seeing all of the sabers of the or the scythes of the Dothraki army light up in fire, you know, giving you like this boost of confidence.
Yeah.
And then seeing them all run into the dark and just having our remaining armies look at the lights slowly extinguishing one by one until all of the lights are extinguished. On the one hand, I got to give credit to the director of the episode, because this is one cost saving measure. You know, one way to deal with a very expensive budget for an episode like this is you can get rid of the horses very easily by doing it this way. This way it's less complicated to include horses in your battle. At the same time, it was done beautifully. You know, it added dread. It added this sense of, oh my God, we're up to, you know, this is an army that we've known since the first season is an army that everybody fears that has been working its way to Westeros. And in just a moment, they were completely overwhelmed and destroyed.
Man.
Was it practical for them to do it this way so that they could save a little money? Sure. But it was very effective the way that they did it.
You know, Roberto, I think that there's going to be a lot of people who say, who spent a lot of time saying, you know, if Danny has the Unsullied, the Dothraki against this and that and counting numbers of soldiers, and she spent so much time figuring out how to get boats and all this, and oh, that was all wasted. They just died in the first thing. And my answer to that is, no, it wasn't wasted. They just died really quickly. That was the point. All of that, in the end, that's how war goes, and that's how this battle was always going to go.
And it was a crutch for her, because the reason she had the support she had comes from these people from the outside. She has to earn the right to be the queen of Westeros by earning the trust of the people of Westeros. So now this is the challenge for her. Now she doesn't have a big army to persuade others to join her. You know, and now she doesn't have two massive dragons. These dragons are now pretty badly hurt, it looks like, to be able to coerce others. She has to win the people of Westeros' trust if she truly wants to be able to take over King's Landing and make changes to the way things are done in Westeros. So, I think it adds an interesting element now to her power and her presence, and whether she's seen as, I mean, even her closest ally, her closest supporter, Jorah, is now dead, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's down to just basically herself, Jon, a few others that believe in her. She's going to have to earn the trust of the people if she expects to have an impact now.
Yeah, and guess what? She just found out that John's her nephew.
Yeah.
We forgot about that because it happened 2 seconds before this episode started.
So that hasn't been resolved. That's a conversation that's probably waiting to happen in the next episode or so.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you got a chance to see the teaser for next week.
I'm not going to watch. I don't watch the teaser until.
Then I won't.
Yeah.
I won't say anything about it. There's a good line in the teaser. But I will keep it out of here in order to not spoil you or spoil any of the listeners.
What I usually do is I only watch the teaser after Heath and I have done the deep dive because I find myself like going down paths because of it. Though I will admit that after watching the first two, I don't think I would have done that because they didn't really show much.
No, they've been very careful. Yeah. They've been very careful with how they've teased them. I mean, there was no footage really of the battle in the teaser for this episode. It was all about those first 10 minutes of anticipation. It was...
Which was so awesome, too, the way they built that up and didn't do anything for so long. And that takes a lot of balls to do that because you're sitting there and you're saying people are expecting a fight and literally they put out like marketing materials, the longest battle, this many minutes, blah, blah, blah. And then the battle doesn't start for so long, but I loved it. I loved every second of it. I actually snuck, my wife and I do kind of like a 2-part bedtime for our son and it was her part. And I snuck out and I said, honey, I can't wait. I'm watching the first 15 minutes. And I watched it and nothing had happened.
And then
she came back in and she said, did I miss? I said, I'm not saying anything. And then as I sat there, I'm like, man, I watched this whole 15 minutes because I wanted to get over the nervousness of all the battling blood, but it didn't even happen yet. So I just have to do this again twice, waiting for it. But having watched it already, rewatched that part just before it began, it was really masterful. And even the first part about how the camera starts with Sam and goes to Tyrion and keeps moving to different heroes as we go through, I just thought there was so much fantastic direction in this. I mean, I just think of the way that, Viserion, the dragon, the white dragon was just flopping around the castle. And like, it was, oh man, there's just so much great stuff, so much visuals. I just want to watch it again.
He had been hurt so much so that his neck, he had a wound on his neck and fire was pouring out of that wound, which I thought was really cool. So you could tell, you know, he was in bad shape, but he was going to continue fighting as much as he could, even though he was in this bad position. And John, for all his effort trying to confront him, he just could not, you know, he was completely overwhelmed as well.
But he tried.
He tried. There was a moment there where I thought, is he going to kind of surprise him by trying to stab him through the neck or something? But no, he just stood there, stood his ground, almost basically waited to get burnt down with his ice fire. And in that moment where the Night King died, the dragon collapsed as well. I guess there might be some disappointment out there in that we didn't have a full-on fire versus ice dragon battle. We did get a little bit of wrestling between the dragons, but we didn't get the kind of the classic, you know, two blue fire versus red fire hitting each other and canceling each other out kind of thing. But we still did get some dragon versus dragon action there. I thought that I mentioned this earlier too. I was totally surprised and taken by the use of the weather and how that overwhelmed the dragons. You know, that I had not thought about that at all, about how the Night King was able to control those elements and how it pretty much, you know, completely destroyed their plan. I mean, the plan was destroyed initially by the fact that the Dothraki were all wiped out, right? I mean, the original plan was to wait out the Night King so that then Dany and Jon would go after them. But the moment that Dany saw the Dothraki getting all wiped out, she takes off with the dragon to try and do some help. And so everything just starts to collapse from that point forward. So just the fact that the Night King really outsmarted them in that way and used the weather as part of that, I thought was very cool.
Oh, yeah, man. You know what? We could just keep on talking about it. It's so awesome. I just want to take a little bit more of your time, and I want to ask you one more question before we go.
Yeah.
I had been thinking, and I did a little tweet about how John has really never had a straight up, and I think you may have commented on it, a straight up hero moment, like Danny killing all the Dothraki, stepping out of flames to throngs of people cheering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even Night King rising the dead at Hardhome.
Right.
Cersei blowing up the Sept, right? John's moments are personal, are those between people, are bringing people together. Do you think we're ever going to get a hero moment like that from John, or is he just not that kind of hero?
I don't know. He is very emblematic of the Stark sense of righteousness and the Stark sense of duty and honesty, right? So in many ways, he is kind of that. He stands for that for which many other people fight for. And so maybe it's his steadfastness in being this honorable person that leads to him not being necessarily the one to have those hero moments, but he is the one who inspires those hero moments.
I think that's a perfect answer, man. I don't know if we're going to get it.
I don't know.
And I'm okay. And I'm starting to feel, when I first wrote that tweet, it was because I had a vision in my mind just through images. Like when I think of theories and think of shows, I think in images. That's just how I think, you know? That's why I can't hang out with people who talk a lot about nasty things, because I think of them in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm a very visual person. And I had a vision of like, and I saw some pictures, people of like, you know, John with a flaming sword and he strikes and he's the victor. But the more people have said what you've said, the more I've come around to feeling like I kind of like him more that he doesn't have it. I mm-hmm. like that. I like what you expressed there. And I like the attitude that he's a hero who doesn't need a hero moment like mm-hmm. that, because he has little ones.
And he is all about family too. His most, you know, at every point that he's put his life on the line, or many of those, has to do with him going to, you know, be there for his family, right? He struggled with that through season one when Ned died and he was at the wall and he was like, I need to go be there for my family, and, you know, trying to find Sansa and recovering Arya and all this stuff, and getting up now to this point where Bran is being threatened, and his whole point was, I gotta go save Bran, right? So that's heroic in and of itself. It's not this epic thing, but it's just as heroic in that he is so committed to his family and to the honor and legacy of the Starks. And now that he's a Targaryen as well as a Stark, we'll have to see kind of how that plays into his heroism.
Man, I am so excited, and the more we've talked about it, the more I am excited that the Night King died, that we're going to, mm-hmm. that it has to be against Cersei, that Cersei and Jaime, Tyrion and Cersei, that we have all these heroes together. I'm happy that all these people didn't die. I'm not a person who needs to see people die to think it's a good episode. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited for what's to come. And I'm just super psyched, man. And I'm super psyched that these next episodes are so long too.
Yeah.
And they can,
and it's plenty of time for characters to die. So
yes.
We can spread these deaths out. Yeah. We don't have to kill everybody in one episode, right?
Hey, listen, my theory I had that Cersei was going to lure the White Walkers into King's Landing and then blow it up with wildfire, it still might come true. She just might lure someone else there. Cause I still think that Cersei has one last huge baboom in her. You know, she is not going out with a whimper. I do not think she's going out like the Night King went out. She's going down fighting, aware of what's going on, clawing for every breath.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, like I said, I think now the upper hand, she's got the Golden Company. She's got the armies of King's Landing. She is in a much stronger position. But, you know, we don't know, for example, talking about earlier about, you know, Dany has lost these armies, right? She now has to earn the trust of the people. Where are the people of the Riverlands? Where are the people of the Iron Islands? Where are the people of the Reach? Where are the people of Pentos and of Dorne? Could we see Dany gathering the support of these folks, kind of to become the army that she's able to bring? We haven't seen any of these for a while. Could we potentially be seeing now a need for this? Could the word of the heroic effort that was done to destroy the Night King get to all these kingdoms? And all of a sudden, the people are like, this is our true leader. This is who we need to follow. And that becomes the threat to take Cersei out. We don't know. It'll be interesting to see if there'll be some kind of a, maybe that's the hero moment that awaits to bring all of these other people together against Cersei, when it looks like Cersei is the one who has the upper hand right now.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, we will be there to find out. And I like the way you brought in Essos too, because I think that this story, a large part of it took place in Essos with Dany, and it just can't be that she brought over some armies. You know, they that's where the eggs came from. And like, there's connections. This world has to like heal and come back together, and not just Westeros. It needs to involve those other places. And I think that I look forward to that. I just wonder if we're going to get like, you know, remember when Sansa and Jon went around to everybody, hey, will you help us? Is it like Dany and Jon are going to be like riding on the dragons? Where are we headed next, honey?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we got to get that army. Take out the clipboard. Did we hit that one yet? Did we knock on that door? You know, like that's going to be fun, man. It's going to be interesting. Well, Roberto, before you go, please remind everyone how they can find you on the interwebs and listen to you on A Pod of Casts.
Yeah, so A Pod of Casts is the episode that I co-host with Abe. You can go to our website at apodofcasts.com, and we're available in all of the different podcasting platforms. We'd love to have you join us and join the discussion. If you go to apodofcast.com, we already have our feedback post up and ready to go. So if you want to leave us any comments there, you can do that. You can email us also at apodofcasts@gmail.com. And if you want to find us on Twitter, which is where I primarily hang out to connect with listeners, the show is at apodofcasts, and I am at Puerto Geekin. And Abe is at HonestAbe72 if you want to connect with us there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, man. This was great. I'm glad that we just kind of talked about it and went through it, because it was a lot. And I will say, none of us mentioned how dark it was. I didn't mind it.
No, I mean, that was kind of part of the piece too. You know, and it's, in a way, the night and the snow and the darkness is what fueled the Night King and his armies, right? So it had to be like that. I thought it was all very effective in that sense. So, we'll definitely see what happens next.
Oh, man. Well, we will be there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Podcast Winterfell. Remember, find us at podcastwinterfell.com, dvrpodcast.com. I will be back with Heath on Wednesday. We're going to be recording our deep dive. And tomorrow night, DJ Tim Hines is going to be doing, this is going to be private. We didn't figure out YouTube yet, but we're still doing a call-in. And we have some great guests booked, some YouTubers, podcasters, fans, people who haven't been on a podcast before. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's Monday. Heath and I is Wednesday. And I'm planning on doing another feedback, I think, before the episode on Sunday. Maybe a little bit earlier, maybe 11 a.m. Pacific time. I'll jump on YouTube, talk about people's emails. Maybe I'll even learn how to look at a chat at the same time that I'm talking. You know, I'm an old man. That's kind of hard for me. But, you know, maybe I'll have to get my son to whisper the chat in my ear. He's six. He knows these things. But this is great. Thanks again, Roberto. It's been so awesome for me to have a guest each time. My guest next week for the initial reaction will be Gina. Gina's awesome. Actually, we did a Handmaid's Tale pod a while back, like a film list. I think you can find it. I think it's on our Patreon right now, and it might be in DVR podcast. I don't know if I put it up on there. But she's going to be joining me to talk about episode 4 next Sunday. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Really appreciate it. And LA Juice, once again, thanks, LA Juice, for that beautiful iTunes review. You really touched Ken and I. That was awesome. Peace out, everybody.